Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
So this is our 50th episode.
What?
Yes.
I mean, yep, due to some unfortunate early numbering, it appears as 48, but...
Yeah, we changed our format. We had some bonus episodes before that would have been regular episodes.
But technically, number 50.
Well, congratulations, you guys.
We did it.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did the thing.
We've played a lot of games together.
So to celebrate, we're going to be playing Gloomhaven. This is not a first playthrough. It is one of our favorite games. So we'll just sort of be doing a deep dive on it and breaking down what we love about it. So it is designed by Isaac Childress of Gloomhaven. And
I feel like he doesn't really need to do anything else at this point. I mean, talk about resting on your laurels. I mean,
well, he does have one of the top Kickstarters in his upcoming Frosthaven, which is sort of a set in the same world as Gloomhaven, kind of. I don't want to say an expansion because it's a full new game, but it has a lot of...
Yeah, it's a standalone. Yeah, it's like a whole new, like, they've gone north of Gloomhaven, and Frosthaven's like this snowy town. And I think, so you get to build up the town, and there's more stuff that you can do in town, basically.
The artist is Alexander Josh T. McDowell and Alvaro Nebbett. It is published by Cephalofair Games, and it has many, many awards. The description, ooh, I've never seen the description. Gloomhaven is a game of Euro-inspired tactical combat in a persistent world of shifting motives. Players will take the role of a wandering adventurer with their own special set of skills and their own reasons for traveling into this dark corner of the world. Players must work together out of necessity to clear out menacing dungeons and forgotten ruins. In the process, they will enhance their abilities with experience and loot, discover new locations, and explore and plunder, and expand an ever-branching story fueled by the decisions they make. This is a persistent game with an changing world that is ideally played over many game sessions. After a scenario, players will make decisions on what to do, which will determine how the story continues, kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure book. Playing through a scenario is a cooperative affair where players will fight against automated monsters using using an innovative card system to determine the order of play and what a player does on their turn. The mechanics are action retrieval, campaign, battle-driven, communication limits, cooperative game, grid movement, hand management, legacy game, modular board, once-per-game abilities, role-playing, scenario, mission, campaign game, simultaneous action selection, solo solitaire game, storytelling, and variable player powers.
I love the idea of choose your own adventure. I mean, those were like some of my favorite books.
Oh, I love choose your own adventure books.
Yeah.
The box art is sort of a couple of armored individuals and maybe, is that a sneaky rogue type?
I think that's that scoundrel.
Yeah.
Yeah, walking through a medieval town.
Oh, I guess we should say at some point that we're going to avoid spoilers, mostly because we haven't played in a while, just based on where we have been in terms of like geographic locations. But right. It's been a little bit since we've played.
We're going to avoid spoilers because we don't remember what's been happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we are still pretty early on in the campaign itself. We have only unlocked one character and we have not played as that character. So
mostly because I won't let Kiwi retire.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the cobbled streets, but it's like almost a night view, but with lots of like glowing candlelight or firelight coming from various shops. So even though it's like a night view, the town is pretty like, I mean, hopping. It looks like it's got some vendor carts on the side.
Oh, in the bottom left, that's the rogue character. Look all sneaky with the daggers.
Yeah. Yeah, with the scoundrel.
The one walking in the street, maybe like a mage or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the art style reminds me of something you might see on like an 80s fantasy novel cover.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Like a Terry Brooks or something.
That's what the art style. I think, you know, so we have the show notes and we just have the box cover. I think really So it's not just the box cover itself. It's this massive box. It weighs 23 pounds.
Yeah.
So you're not only just looking at the box art itself, but then you've got this huge box that you're looking at too. So I think there's a part of it where it's like, would you pick this off the shelf? Be like, I don't know. I feel like I'd be afraid to, like, I'm in a store and I just sort of like shift it around and I feel how heavy it is. It's just like, I'm too afraid to look at the back of this box.
It would be a bit daunting. I imagine this is why we haven't really seen it at any cafes. Or anything around.
Yeah.
Plus even to go through, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, D&D, like to get through like an adventure usually takes, you know, like a couple of hours. And I mean, it's definitely like an investment. And I feel like with many of the legacy games, cafes don't really carry those as much because, I mean,
you're supposed to play a lot.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they should. Then they get return customers.
That's true.
So why did we get this? Why'd you jump in on the hype train when this was on Kickstarter?
So I got in on the second Kickstarter when you did the reprint. I got in on it because of how Tom Vassell had described it on the Dice Tower. He talked a lot specifically about like the card play itself. So from your hand, taking a card that you got to do the top action of one and the bottom action of another. And I just thought that was really, really cool. So that when it came time to look at it more, and then I saw like everything that went into it. There was all this stuff to unlock, like all these scenarios. It was a giant story. Cause I think at that point, like we'd played Mice and Mystics a bunch.
Mm. Right.
Which, by the way, we still haven't finished that scenario. I think we're down to like, I think we still have two left in that one.
We're not great at like our campaign games.
Yeah. We should be better, but we're not.
Our motto in life.
Yeah, we should be better, but we are not. I feel like it scratches all the itches. And then for me personally, like D&D, like I do like the role play portion of D&D. You know, we've done some role play stuff with games here on the podcast, but like my favorite part of D&D is the actual like in the dungeon rolling dice and killing stuff. And for me, like this game is that, like the story aspect is less and it's more the actual like attacking and dungeon stuff.
So yeah, that's why Kiwi basically got this game. However, I think we all agree if we were to just stumble across it in the wild, not knowing what it is, you know, probably wouldn't give it a shot.
Yeah.
All right, BP, History of Gloomhaven.
I don't quite have History of Gloomhaven because as far as I could tell on a quick Google search, there wasn't much published. Maybe that was just me. But also,
there is a game called The Founders of Gloomhaven, which might get into it too, but we haven't played that yet.
Oh, yeah. What I went with instead that I had been thinking about earlier when I was just thinking about Gloomhaven and then thinking about it's Frosthaven, right? The new one?
Yep.
And like one of the things you guys had brought up, like the day that Kickstarter went live, right, was like how quickly it was scaling. And I think you had brought up, right, Exploding Kittens had been like the top grossing, right, Kickstarter or whatever.
Top two.
Second, yeah.
Second.
I think Kingdom Death Monster is the number one.
Okay. So either way, right, and Frosthaven made it up in the top.
Yeah, it's still going. So if it raises another 700,000 in the next 2 weeks, it will be the number three board game or just game, period.
Okay.
And it will be the number 10 all time of any Kickstarter ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, either way, like that got me thinking, right? And Gloomhaven was definitely also very popular, which is why I think Frosthaven, right, is making so much splash. And so it made me start thinking about kind of the history of board game publishing, but then it just kind of the history of board games in general. And I remember at Gen Con last year, we had met this guy who apparently he had had a podcast and I could not find the card readily that he had handed me when we had exchanged cards about our podcast. But he was doing a podcast about the history of games, which I thought was really, really super fascinating, obviously. But when I think about like the history of board games in general, I mean, immediately you can think of like any kind of dice throwing game, right? Being being very ancient. But apparently it goes back to even further to actually Neolithic peoples. So I was thinking like, you know, just like Roman times, maybe ancient Egyptians. I'm sure the ancient Chinese had something, you know, all of these things. But apparently one of the first evidence they have found for some of the oldest board games are from a Neolithic village, I can talk, in southeast Turkey that date from around 5000 BCE, which I find pretty amazing. So, I mean, right, longer than civilization, people have been playing games. And obviously some of them, right, the more popular ones that have stood the test of times are, right, dice. Go came about pretty ancient. Chess also, right, dates to kind of antiquity as well. So it's just interesting to think, right, that while we think of these games as being really new and innovative, and to a certain extent they do have like this long history dating back, again, like longer than humanity. Apparently Snakes and Ladders dates to also the classical period. And they have evidence of hopscotch from the Roman Empire. So, I mean, yeah, there you go. I feel like I've got a new scenario to start going into is, right, the history of some of these old games. And I will have to go down a rabbit hole sometime.
Oh, God. How do we play?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just going to go over the basic rules for the scenario. I'm not really going to cover all the stuff with cities and roads and all that, because we could be here all like it, this would be a two-part podcast. Needless to say, there's a bunch of stuff that you can do in town in order to improve your characters. So once the scenarios are played over a series of rounds, and each scenario is going to give a specific scenario goal that we're trying to achieve, and we win if we achieve it, and we lose if all of our characters are knocked out. Characters themselves are also going to get two secret battle objectives, and you're going to choose one, and that's what you're trying to do, and you'll get extra experience at the end, or you'll get perk marks if you achieve your objective by the end. So while we are doing co-op, there is a little bit of trying to succeed at doing your objective, and the objectives are all kinds of crazy stuff, like be the first to open a door, or do 6 damage on one creature, or open a bunch of chests. So it's all kinds of stuff. So once the scenario is chosen and set up, players are going to decide where their characters will start based on the locations on the scenario map. And at the start of each round, players are going to decide whether they're going to take a long rest or play 2 actions from their hand. If they have less than 2 cards in their hand, they can't take an action, so you have to long rest. And if they have less than 2 cards in your discard pile, you can't take a long rest. And if you can't do either, your character is exhausted and you're knocked out. If you're doing the 2 actions, you're going to go through your hand and you're going to select 2 cards, one that you're going to do either the what's written in the top portion of the card, or every card, the top portion can be used as a attack or a melee 2 attack. And then the other half of the card, you're going to select another card and you're going to do the bottom half of that action, or you can do the move 2 action, which is on the bottom of all cards. All these cards are also going to have an initiative number in the middle, and that is going to be the initiative. So when you play these 2 cards, we're all going to select simultaneously. We're going to play them face down, so we're not going to know who's going to go first. And then the other big deal is we also can't talk about it. So we're supposed to minimize the amount of table talk that we want to do. The rule book does say we can increase the difficulty of the scenario by 1 if we want to table talk, essentially. We can talk in generalities. We can say like, hey, I'm going to go take care of that guy. And then you can plan something else. But you can't say like, I'm going to use spare dagger and juggernaut and I'm going to do 18 damage to this one guy. So when you play the cards face down, the card that you lay down first is going to be your initiative, and the card that you lay down second will just be your other initiative. If there's ever a tie between players and monsters, the player will always go first. If there's a tie between monsters, the players get to decide. And if there's a tie between players, the non-leading card will decide. And if it's still a tie after that, the players will decide. And then a long rest is always initiative 99, but they will go after cards that actually have an initiative of 99. And a long rest, you'll get to receive all your discarded cards. You'll get to choose which one you remove completely from the scenario, and you'll also gain 2 health. After that, we're going to flip over all the monster cards, and the monster cards are going to have their own initiative. And so we're going to go from in ascending order. So the lowest initiative will go first, and then we'll work our way up. So at that point, you're going to play the top or bottom. It doesn't matter which one you do first. It doesn't matter at that point how you laid them down. You can do them in any order you want. If you played a card for its top portion and you decide after when it's your turn that you want to do the bottom portion instead, totally cool. Doesn't matter. It's just those are the two cards that you get to play. If you do attack, you're going to draw every attack has its own base number. And then you're going to draw a card from your attack modifier deck, and they will range from -2 up to +2. And then as your character levels up, you can make adjustments to that deck. So like, I think Eric has a +3 card, BP's plus or -2 has been taken out completely. The decks also have null, so you do no damage whatsoever. And they also have a -2 where you could potentially do double damage. And then there's a bunch of other modifiers that go into figuring out how much damage that monster actually takes, but we're not going to go through those. They're going to be different for every monster. And as the monsters get harder, they will also get kind of special abilities to help them not take as much damage. Some of your actions will create elemental infusions. You can't use, so if you do a action that creates the fire element, you can't then use that fire element in the same turn. But like somebody going after you could then use it. And those elements will degrade over time. On a monster's turn, they're going to perform everything that's on their monster card from top to bottom. And they're always going to go for the closest player. So melee, they're always going to try and close with that player. And for range, they're always going to attempt to get within range of that closest player. If there's a tie, there's two players that are closer, they're going to go for the one that acted first in the round. And if there's still a tie, the players are going to decide. The monsters always draw. They have a attack modifier deck, just like the players do. But they have one deck for all the monsters. So potentially they could hit that null and that 2x a lot more. If a player takes damage, they can take that damage, or they can lose a card from their hand, or lose 2 cards from their discard to negate that damage. And then at the end of the round, if any player or monster drew their 2x card or their null damage card, then all the cards for that deck will be shuffled. So you'll reshuffle your damage modifier deck. If the monster ability card has a shuffle symbol on it, we're going to reshuffle that deck. Each of the monsters has 6 or 8 cards per monster that you can go through. And I think 2 or 3, depending on the monster, will have that reshuffle. And usually they are on cards that are like their worst card, like the worst card for the players. All the elements are going to decrease 1. If the round is using a round tracker, we're going to increase that. If they have more than 2 cards in their discard, they can perform a short rest at this time, which basically lets them take all their cards from their discard, randomly choose 1 to remove from the scenario. If they want, they can take a hit point of damage in order to keep that card and choose a different one, but you can only do that once. So that different one would just be lost completely. And then from there, you just move on to the next round until the mission is complete. And that is essentially the scenario rules, negating all the kind of like not fiddly stuff, but, you know, wounds and bleeding and all that jazz.
Muddling.
Yes. Muddling. And also, I didn't talk about items and all that kind of stuff. A lot of things.
Now I remember how to play.
Perfect.
So let's play.
We just finished a game of Gloomhaven. To recap, Eric, the tinker, supported BP, the scoundrel, as she epically won the mission. We don't really know where Kiwi the Brute was because he was unconscious.
What's his name again?
Baron von Brute.
Yeah. then mine is Xena.
Yep. And Tizzlebus, the Tinkerer.
Yeah. So strategy was to win.
Because we can't give away scenario things. So, yeah, I mean, was just again to try to work together, you know, in support of the abilities that our character have. And Kiwi, unfortunately, got cornered off and
he was sort of isolated from the group. And we were really probably our opening strategy was poor. We could have reworked that.
But we still won. So how can you say that it was poor?
Well, we got lucky.
It's not all just win or lose. There's a whole, you know, gradient in there.
Sure, sure, sure. Either way, we were working our way through the scenario, thinking many a times we were just going to do it just to like keep playing it out because we really love this game. And once we get started, at least I do, like we were like, let's just finish it out. Let's see how we do. So.
You mean you just really wanted the loot?
I did not get very much loot, though.
You kind of were embarrassing on that one.
I was.
I mean, I could have stayed in it a little bit longer had I used my health potion. I just wasn't paying attention to it.
Mistakes were made.
We always forget about those things, yeah.
Yeah.
So the theme. Kiwi, what do you think of the theme of Gloomhaven?
So, I mean, it goes back to like the reason I love Dungeons and Dragons is because part of that fantasy theme, because it lets you do a lot of things just like storytelling wise. And so, I mean, this is essentially, I said at the beginning of the show, this is probably like my favorite part of D&D, which is just the dungeon dice rolling combat stuff. So like theme wise, I really enjoy it. Could it be other stuff? Like, yeah, I guess like it could be. You know, your space scoundrels going through a derelict ship or something. And you could have something very similar. But yeah, I like the theme. It's the parts of D&D that I like.
They do put a twist on it. That's, you know, they're not like orcs and elves. They're different races that they came up with a whole different backstory. So it's not just like fantasy trope. It's a whole sort of built world.
It is. And I like the whole story. Telling like, so we went ahead and did a city adventure, right? And we lost. But I mean, those are just great opportunities to feel like you're really getting into the world and that you're not just doing like a dungeon crawl scenario where you're just, you know, Final Fantasy, you're just beating the monsters and like, you know, just going for the loot all the time. Like you feel like, at least with those types of scenarios, that you want to act on your character, right? And what your character tells. And then you get to learn a little bit more about Gloomhaven. You either get reputation, lose reputation is an option, you know? So I feel like those types of things really help bring it in a lot more than just, hey, we're going to like have some card play with variable player power mechanics, right? For beating monsters. Like, I feel like all of those different elements help really bring it together very tightly.
I mean, that's part of what I enjoy too. Like when we pulled that city event, one, we didn't have to. And two, like the decision that we made was based on like the story. Like we didn't make it based on what we think would be coolest. Oh, wait, which one of us has that thing? Oh, I have that thing. Mm-hmm. Would my character do that? I don't think my character would do that. All right. Well, then we go with option A.
So the art and components, BP.
I mean, I think it's all pretty clear and it's pretty cool. Like from the get-go when we started setting it up and we got our character cards, they're all really nicely done on how you can see your scenario. The player mats have the characters in them too. I'm trying to remember just the game itself. I mean, it has really nice components. It's got a nice disc boards to keep track of your stuff. I mean, it's a 23-pound box.
It must be good. Yeah, I don't think like the art is anything spectacular. It's not like a call to adventure or anything like that. You know, there's a few like portraits and stuff. Those are really nice. And obviously component wise, there's a ton of stuff. The minis are cool. Mm-hmm. The map they've got is cool. So there's a bunch of different things and it's all good. I don't think anything is like spectacular, but I also think there's so much in this game. If they tried to overdo all the art and everything we're trying to jump out at you and being eye catching, it would be too much.
Yeah.
Good for what it is. I think if they tried to go overboard, one, it would be super expensive because there's so much in this game. But also, you know, it would be too much like we've said in other games, it's like an assault on the eyes because they went overboard. Mm-hmm. So I think there was definitely more of a focus on functionality and design over necessarily super cool art.
That's okay sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like the art is big where it needs to be big, and the art is simple where it needs to be simple. Like the item cards, like that art doesn't need to be crazy. It just needs to be there enough to like give a feel for what that item is. And then, you know, for the scoundrel, you know, the picture that's on the board, the player board, like that's a cool looking picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mechanics, Kiwi. Which of your 50 mechanics is your favorite?
Well, let me scroll back up. I still think like, yeah, I think that you know, it very easily could have been dice rolls that decide the plus or minus. Being able to affect that battle, being able to take out cards, put in cards to like improve your battle modifier deck. Like that's super cool to take that and make it so that that is what you're not rolling dice, you're drawing these cards. And there's even a section in the rule book that talks about like, hey, if you want like less swingy or less randomness, you can pull out the x2 and the null cards.
But that is not recommended because you will miss out on epic moments like in our game.
Yeah, winning our game.
Yeah, I would say as soon as my character was exhausted and you guys like were both just like, we're not going to win. We're just going to get some XP and some loot. And then maybe we'll try again afterwards. And we would have missed it had we, decided, okay, we'll just restart it.
And that has happened a couple times, I think, where we had some pretty major gameplay at the end.
Yes.
I mean, I will say for mechanics, which I know you guys are like, you want to talk about mechanics. I still really love variable player powers. I feel like whenever we come up with a game that talks about them, like I'm real excited about it. And I think because in cooperative games, that really adds to how you play, you know?
Well, I think just in a game of where you're trying to embody a character like this one, it goes a long way in helping you, feel the difference between my character and your character. So different roles and different approaches.
Yeah. And we've only played the base game. And I think we've played all but one character. I think the Kraghart is the only base character we haven't played. And they all seem very, very different. Like, I think going to make a Kraghart character to replace Baron Von.
Well, you have to, because we still need a tank, and this is why I wouldn't let you retire.
Right. Yeah. Which I think the Kraghart, just based on the picture, I feel like the Kraghart is probably going to be a tank.
Yes, I approve. Yeah. So I think my favorite kind of mechanic is just the way that you pick your cards and you don't really discuss. You can give some general stuff, but then you play them and you don't know the initiative order and you don't know. It's not like a lot of cooperative games where you can plan out your round exactly. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, there's still a lot of surprise in what's going to happen. And then that also kind of prevents the whole quarterbacking player trying to tell everybody what to do, because they can't do that in this game. You can give some general things of, hey, try to take down this guy. But ultimately, that's happened a few times where you're like, I'll give it a shot. But, the hand you have, like, you don't have a high initiative card or you don't have a low initiative card. So you can't really control it that much. And then on like the whole note of like being versus Dungeons and Dragons, to me, like the weakest part of Dungeons and Dragons is the dungeon part. I would like, if somebody's like, hey, I just want to do like a dungeon delve, I would not play Dungeons and Dragons. I'd play Gloomhaven, because it does combat and, tactical combat a million times better than any RPG I've played. So like, this is kind of my go-to for if I just want to do like dungeon delve combat system, like this is way better. And then Dungeons and Dragons is more about like, creativity and exploring and, some like combat D&D is pretty boring to me, like compared to this. So like, that's where this game excels. And that's where the big difference is.
I agree.
Rules, BP.
I can't remember back in the day when we started playing, did we have trouble? But like, I feel like the cards themselves are pretty clear as far as like the display. So I think once you get it, but it's definitely one of those games where there's like so much going on that you do need to make sure that, I don't know, if I remember correctly, I feel like the first go through may have been a little touch and go. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. This one is, I mean, for the complexity, it's a hard one to kind of learn. I do feel like we get back into it pretty quick of remembering And there's some fidgety rules in like the way initiative is and the top card, bottom card piece. Like it's really clever once you get it. But I feel like that tends to be the like the trick, the hold up part.
Yeah. And I think we had to look something up this one game because based just scenario specific. So we won't get into what the specifics are. But I think every once in a while there might be some scenario specific question you may have. But I mean, I'll leave it up to Kiwi on how the rule book is laid out. But it just seems like, I mean, it's a complex game, but the cards themselves, as far as like how everything is like set up, can be pretty straightforward. But it's definitely something you're going to need to give yourself. Like, I don't think we messed up as much as we did in Mice and Mystics, though. So I feel like it was clearer than that. Kiwi, how about that rule book?
Yeah, I mean, the rule book itself, like, there are examples. It's 50 pages.
Right.
Like, I'm just going to start with that. The rule book is 50 pages long, and it's not like there's big pictures or anything like that. It is 50 full pages of rules. There is a decent table of contents, and then there is a section on the back that tells you, like, where to go for, like, you know, there's a section that element icons go to page 24, conditions and effects go to page 22 to 23. So it tells you where to go. So it's a decent index, but it's 50 pages. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like trying to find all the things you need to in order to get what you need can be hard. There were a couple of things we looked up that we looked them up just because it had been a while since we played and I missed it when I went through the rules again, just to catch myself up so that I could do the rule section at the beginning and two, make sure that the game ran smoothly. There was one thing that we had to look up because it wasn't definitive in the rules. It was the same result as what Eric and I had come to the conclusion of, but it's a lot of rules.
So player interaction, again, I've kind of already covered it. It's a cooperative game. There's a ton of interaction. You have to make hard choices like, do I loot or do I go save Kiwi?
can we do both? I tried. I looted.
Spoiler alert, we couldn't do both. But because of the kind of the card system, quarterbacking isn't an issue. Well, I wouldn't say isn't an issue.
Right,
it could always be an issue. But it is a much, much less of an issue than, say, a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Top-notch player interaction. A little different than maybe like your Kitchen Rush or Sheriff of Nottingham style, but a good cooperative player interaction. All right. Would you play it again?
Kiwi?
Yeah, I'll go first.
I'll say yes again at the same time.
Just 3, 2, 1, and then we all say yes. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
Yes.
You suck.
At the same time. Anyway, yeah, I think that goes without saying. We need to play it more often.
Yeah.
That's why we chose to do it for our 50th episode.
Yeah, we used to play it like almost every other week.
I think the good question is like, who would you recommend this for? Who do you think should try to play it? And who do you think should maybe like jump in if they can, but it might not be for them? I would say it's not for everybody.
No.
Yeah, I think the price tag kind of takes it away too. So like when I backed it, it was $100. Essentially to back it. And then retail, I think it's like 130, but people always talk about, you know, it depends on how many times you're going to play it as well. Like if you play it 13 times at $130, that's $10 per.
Right. So movie quality entertainment.
Yeah. And even less than that though. Right.
Cause you think how many players you have on that. Like there's just the three of us, but you can play up to how many per.
Four is the max.
Right.
So like you're talking $5 to $250 per person for a 4 hour, 3 hour game, right?
Right.
Depending on the scenario and how much effort you want to put into it. So like for your money, all you got to do really is pay 10 times and you've beat out a movie.
But to be fair, a lot of people don't get to 10 plays in a game.
Exactly. So I think this is one of those things whereas if you have a group that you can sit down and play 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 times. Even if you don't complete the scenario, even if you play just 10, I feel like you get your money's worth because you've beat out a movie at that point.
Well, I feel like if you have like if you're into D&D, but you can't maybe where you are, though you're not finding like a good regular D&D group or whatever, I think like it could be a good crossover for those also type of people because I feel like we've done a lot of comparison.
We have, but I would say this is not a replacement for D&D.
I'm not saying a replacement, but aspect. A crossover.
But I would say this is a very good idea if, like, you know, you're trying to play D&D, but it's a time issue more for a DM who just doesn't burnout.
Yeah.
Because, like, that happens a lot as the DM gets a burnout and then you kind of get lost. This is a really good game to, like, fill in. Like, hey, let's play a couple months of Gloomhaven and nobody has to DM or do all the creative heart or do all the hard work. So, like, you know, if you get in a situation where people are busy and you want to keep playing, but you don't have the time to put into, like, a full D&D campaign or any RPG campaign, this is the kind of game I think is really good for those type of people. They've already got a group. They're used to meeting regularly, and it's a really fun game that kind of hits, kind of scratches a similar itch. I would say they're not the same.
No, for me anyway. I agree.
Yeah. And I think those are the types of people, though, the types of people that would probably play a long campaign like that.
That's
like,
what I'm thinking.
If you're into legacy style games, this is probably more for you, I think.
But I feel like it's different from your pandemic legacy people who, I mean, a pandemic, even a legacy round, like, can still be over, right, pretty quickly. And I feel like that kind of legacy style is very different from this. It is a much more where you want to build characters up. So that's why I was reaching out to, like, D&D players who might want to cross over into a different type of kind of character buildup.
Yeah. This is also a much heavier game too. So, like, if you're not into heavy games, well, yeah, literally and figuratively a much heavier game. So I think if you're a player who is but even if you do D&D, but you're not into heavy games, this dev probably isn't for you.
Or the combat portion of a D&D.
Right.
Yeah. If you're into D&D because you're into the role play more than the combat,
like, you'll get some of it. But I mean, I tend to, like I said, I prefer D&D for the RP and the adventure aspect more so. And I enjoyed this still. Yeah, so there you go. That is that's a Gloomhaven.
Hello, if you have any recommendations of games you would like to hear our impressions on, please send them our way. You can do so via the email. Have you heard of it? It's at firstturntabletop@gmail.com. Or there's this thing called Twitter and Instagram. We're at the First Turncast. And as a camel, I will let you know, you should write, review, and subscribe at your favorite podcatchers. And play more games.
So now, next round, you have the big choice of, do we save Kiwi or do we loot? Is the question.
I mean, we can loot on our way to the door. Let's be reasonable.
Yeah, let's be reasonable. Holy shit. It's fucking dead.
It doesn't
and
matter.
Then minus 20, four, because he has four shield, is 18. She does 18 damage. We should be better, but we're not.